one body bag or two?
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to Tea Time Horror Stories, or Tea Time Horrors, whichever you like, whichever, you know, grabs your fancy. I'm going to jump in and first off say I'm going to apologize for this episode as it is late, and it, believe me, it was not intentional. We had no intentions on making this late at all. We had actually already recorded this episode when technical errors happened. Remember, it has been a really long time since we've done this, and I'm not a professional at this, so please forgive us for this late episode, but it is coming out, so thanks for sticking around. It is season 2, episode 3, and it is week of the true crime. Murder, true crime, whichever one. And today I have with me is Joseph.
Same old.
Nothing new.
Nothing special.
You're not special. And today, I'm not necessarily drinking tea because it is past midnight and I am tired AF after working a full 8-hour shift. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are back to work. But the stay in place is still in order for some places. So, well, some of us have to go back to work, I guess.
Yeah. So if you're not drinking tea, what are you drinking?
Don't know if I'm going to get, you know.
Sody pop.
Just I'm drinking sody a sody pop. Pop. I'm drinking pop in a glass. Pop in a glass. So, as I mentioned, we are covering a true crime today, and as I have mentioned before, we have broadened our horizons to true crime, so we will be covering anything that is true crime related, whether it's a kidnapping, missing, or, you know, it could be anything. So, today, I am actually covering missing, so, you know, something that's missing. Someone's. That is missing. But actually, I forgot to ask. Joe, what are you drinking?
Yeah, I'm drinking the same thing I drank last time. Luckily, I bought 2 bottles. I drank it last time, too.
I know, but remember you said you had forgotten about that we had bought that from?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Target.
Well, it didn't help that we had it in a bag and in our closet. But yeah, I'm drinking the Teavana Peach Green Tea, which is actually pretty good. The last time I had it has a hint of lemongrass and mint, and I like both of those. Sam can beg to differ on the mint, though.
Oh God, mint is nasty.
No, it's not. It's delicious.
Nope.
You should try some.
Mint should not go into things.
York peppermint patties, because those are amazing too.
Nope. Mint should not go into a lot of things, and just
mint and dark chocolate taste so good together.
I mean, I had mint in my smoothie the other day, and it actually wasn't half bad. Whether I'm getting, you know, used to it, I don't know. I don't want to say that just yet for mint. So, as I mentioned, we are covering a missing persons, or persons in this case. I am covering the case of the Sauter family. It's actually a really known case. Joe already knows about this case, but it's pretty well known, and it's like shrouded with mystery to the 10th power. People just don't understand it. People don't get it. And even to this day, it is a mystery to even the town folks themselves. So let's jump into it, shall we?
Let's jump right into this mystery.
All right, so let's jump into it, right? So we're covering the disappearance of the Sauter family, or the Sauter children, as it mostly is referred to as it is children that went missing. So picture this, all right? So it's Christmas Eve, December 24th, 1945. Fire erupts and completely engulfs a 2-story farmhouse under the cover of the night. The fire would destroy the house belonging to the Sauter family in Fayetteville, West Virginia, United States. At the time, it was occupied by George Sauter, his wife Jenny, and their nine of their 10 kids. One of their kids was off to war. During the fire, 4 of the 9 children were able to escape. 5 children did not, but there is a twist. The bodies of the 5 children have never been found to this day. The surviving Sauter family believe to this day that the 5 missing children are alive and were kidnapped. The house was never rebuilt. Instead, the family converted the site into a memorial garden for the missing 5 children. In the 1950s, the family and many others came to doubt that the children had died in the fire. No bodies were ever found, with the authorities claiming the bodies were destroyed in the fire. And as we know, bodies take a certain amount of temperature to burn. We covered this in, I think it was our season 1, episode 2 or episode 3, when we covered sudden human combustion.
It was spontaneous human combustion.
Yes, spontaneous. There you go. If you want, you can go. If you haven't already, go ahead and go back to that and go listen to it. In there, you'll hear the details of what a human body needs in order to burn at a certain temperature for a certain amount. But I'll also get back into that for those who don't want to go back to that. That's fine. That was many, many episodes and many moons ago. The Sauter family put a billboard at the site along State Route 16 with pictures of the five, offering rewards for the information that would bring closure to the case. They were looking for closure more so than anything else, whether someone can prove to them that they did perish in the fire or if they were kidnapped and to bring them back home safe. So this remained all the way up until Jenny Sauter, their mother, died in 1989. So it stayed up for quite a couple years. Of course, I'm going to give you guys some backstory on the Sauter family. You know, it's me. I love backstory, and hopefully other people do. I've been following this case for some time. When I heard about this case way back in the day, it completely interested me. It like blew my mind out of the water to the point of how can five children just vanish? Like, there had to be something, you know, there has to be an explanation for it. So as I said, it just I can never stop thinking about it. Even to this day, every so often, if I have time, I'll just Google Sauter family and see if anything new has come up, and, you know, just maybe hoping that one day something will. The amount of evidence, or really the lack of evidence, to claim that the kids were all burned is, it's kind of interesting. Back to it, let's give you some family story. So George Sauter was born with the name of George Sodu, so S-O-D-D-U, in Tuscola, Sardinia, Italy, in 1895. He immigrated to the U.S. when he was 13 years old with his older brother, who would leave him and return to Italy the moment George had cleared customs at Ellis Island. So he went straight back. George was completely alone in the foreign and alien country. Once coming to the U.S., he changed his name to George Sauter. A lot of people changed their names when they came to the United States. But he would refuse to talk as to why he left his homeland. He was the only one to leave. Everyone else stayed there. Again, I searched pretty extensively as to why it was just him. I mean, it could be his family, like, you know, let's send him away so he can get, you know, maybe to a better place or better, you know, something better than what was going on at that time, which I will also cover in a little bit as well. Not long, George Sauter was able to get work on the railroads in Pennsylvania as an errand boy. He would carry water and other supplies to the workers. After years of being an errand boy, he was able to find a more permanent work in Smithen, West Virginia, as a driver, and within a few years, he started his own trucking company. At first, it was hauling dirt, and eventually he got a deal with hauling coal for the coal mines in that region. It is here he meets Jenny, a storekeeper's daughter who has also come to the U.S. from Italy in her childhood. They would soon wed. After getting married, they moved to Fayetteville, which had a large population of Italian immigrants, in their two-story house that was 2 miles away from the main town. In 1923, they started their family, having their first of their 10 children. During this time, George's business skyrocketed to success, and they became one of the most respected middle-class families around. Most respected them, but many also described them as having strong opinions about many subjects and were not shy about expressing them. They sometimes alienated themselves. In particular, they did not have a problem with showing how much they hated the Italian dictator Benito Mussolini. He really had the biggest dislike for this guy, more so because his son was fighting in the war, and this was the war that, you know, the person he was fighting against, but also for all the crappy things he did to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. He was not a very nice guy, so he would have very strong arguments with a lot of people in the community, because there's a lot of people who were pro Mussolini, and then there was a lot of people who were against him, and he just so happened to be against him, but there also just so happened to be a lot of people who were for the guy that lived in that area. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like almost a 50-50 kind of thing in the neighborhood. So the last child was born in 1943. Really think about it. Okay. The first one was born in 1923. That's 20 years.
Yeah, I was about to say a whole 20 years for the second child to be born.
No. The last child.
Oh,
not the second. Years, they had 10. Yes. In 20 years, they had 10 kids.
Which means they are popping out 2 per year. Just kidding.
Wow, I thought I was bad at math. Joe, what happened?
It's late.
Seriously, I thought I was bad at math. So no, they had basically a kid every other year. Yeah. Every other year. So that poor vagina is all I have to say. By then, their second oldest son, Joseph, had left home to serve in the military during World War II. So remember how George is very outspoken about his dislike toward Mussolini? Well, there you go. The following year, in 1945, Mussolini was executed by firing squad. However, George's criticism of Mussolini left a very sour note for some people. In October 1945, a visiting life insurance salesman warned George that his house, in quotes, would go up in smoke and your children are going to be destroyed, end quote. Yes. Another visitor to the house who was seeking work was spotted scouting the house. He found George working out back and warned George that, in quotes, a pair of fuse boxes would cause a fire someday. George was clearly thrown off by this, more so by the stranger. He had the house rewired to make sure it would be okay, and the company afterwards said that everything was safe. In the weeks before Christmas that year, his son would notice strange cars parked along the main highway and throughout town, with people inside watching the younger Sodder children as they returned home from work. From school. Okay, so yeah, things had been very suspicious since for a while before this fire happened, so they didn't really think of this until after, though, and then when they start putting things together.
But still, wouldn't you think to call the authorities if you were suspecting that your children were being followed or watched during school?
I mean...
Or after school? Granted, the time, you said this was like in the 1920s.
40s.
1940s.
Yeah, in the 1940s.
So like 1940s, obviously it's... Things were a little bit more lenient then, but it's also kind of, wouldn't you want somebody else? I'm going back to that. It's just, wouldn't you want to have somebody else keeping an eye on your children that you can trust and possibly pointing out to the authorities that, hey, these suspicious people are kind of like watching our house and our kids and stuff?
Well, that's a valid argument. There you go. That's the word. It's a valid argument, but we're going to get into detail as to why they also don't really trust the authorities anyways. So I'll get there when I get there. Overall, this seems like a pretty normal family, right? Pretty normal? Nothing too, besides popping out babies every once every other year?
Yeah, that and their total disdain for Mussolini.
Most people had a disdain for this guy.
Yeah, I know they did, but still. It's,
yeah. So, all right.
Tell the wrong people about your political likes and dislikes.
That's everywhere nowadays, too. Everything seemed pretty normal. I mean, there was a lot of people at the time who were against Mussolini, but there was also a lot of people who thought Mussolini wasn't that bad.
He doesn't seem like a bad guy.
Well, he kind of belonged to the National Fascist Party.
Well, I know. I was just talking sarcastically.
I know. I was replying sarcastically. So he was part of the... He belonged to the National Fascist Party. For people who don't know that up, think Hitler. They worked together. Yes, you either were against him or you were with him, but many suspected the outspoken dislike for the man was the reason for the fire. So let's get back to the fire and what happened on Christmas Eve of 1945. Like every year, they celebrated as a family. Maureen, the eldest daughter of the family, had been working. She really wanted to surprise her younger sisters, Martha, 12, Jenny, 8, and Betty, 5. She had been working hard to get them the perfect gifts that they've wanted all year. The younger children were so excited, they wanted to wait for their sister and ask their mother if they could stay up past their usual bedtime, which was 10 p.m. The mother broke and agreed only if the two oldest children, or the oldest sons at the time, 14-year-old Maurice and 9-year-old brother Luis, remembered to put the cows in and feed the chickens before going to bed themselves. Like I said, their usual bedtime was 10 p.m., but by now, her husband and two oldest boys, John, 23, and George, Jr., 16, were already asleep and having worked a full day of work. They had gone to bed because they're early risers. And, you know, they have work early in the morning. So they agreed with their mother and she took the youngest child, which was 2-year-old Sylvia, upstairs, and they went to bed together. They would retire just before midnight once everyone was home, and they retired up in the attic. It was wasn't an abnormal thing. It wasn't abnormal, but abnormal things started to happen starting midnight.
Oh, it's actually a pretty nice house.
Yeah, they did really well taking care of it. The father was... So again, like I said, come midnight, things started to be a little bit funky. So Jenny was awoken at 12:30 a.m. by a prank call, one that she will never forget all the way until her death. The caller asked for someone who didn't live at the house and laughed in a way that Jenny thought was weird. In an odd sense, because it was drowned out by the clanking of glasses and even more laughter in the background, she thought it was a prank call from a drunken Christmas party. Annoyed, she hung up and returned to bed. About half an hour later, she was woken up again, this time by a loud banging noise. An object had been thrown and landed on the top of their roof. She heard it roll down to the side, but instead of investigating and way too fucking tired, she ignored it. She fell back to sleep. Within minutes, she woke up for a third time around 1 a.m., but this time it wasn't from a phone call or a loud thud, but it was from the smell of smoke. The Sauter family house was on fire. It had started in the home office, which was George's office. In a panic, Jenny rushed to her husband and woke him. The pair ran around the house trying to wake all their children. The children who had stayed up were all sleeping together in the attic, but their attempts to escape were blocked by a burning staircase. George had tried to call the fire department, but their phone lines were not working. George and the two eldest siblings, sleeping in the same room, John and Myron, were able to escape. Jenny and their two-year-old daughter, Sylvia, escaped as well. One of the kids ran into the neighbors to call the fire department, while George ran to the side of the house where he knew he had a ladder, but it wasn't there. He was going to use the ladder to get to the attic and rescue the remaining kids, but that couldn't happen. The ladder was missing, and it was later found in a ditch nearby. Well, not really nearby, but it was found in a ditch. George tried his next move, and that was to drive one of his trucks to the side of the house, but it wouldn't start. He tried all of them, which were two, and none of them would start. Both of the trucks had worked earlier as they were used to go to work, but now they were not working, and they never had problems like this, as George was very meticulous in making sure he maintained them. So the fire brigade was notified of the house on fire, but they were already short of staff due to the fact that it was Christmas Eve and mostly because men were away serving in the war. There was only one person working that night and he could not drive the truck.
Of course.
Let's have the person work on Christmas or Christmas Eve and he cannot drive, but we're going to have him work there anyways. He had to call every person and try to find someone who was willing to come in or who would answer, who was not drunk or partying at the time. He needed at least one more fireman to help him put out the fire. Talk about bad staffing.
Not only that, but it's just like, who gives a shit about a burning house?
Right, with the family that has been reported that there's still people stuck inside. Right. So the Sauter family had managed to escape, were forced to stand around for 7 hours as the house burned to the ground with five of the children trapped inside. George screamed and fought to get to his children, burning the flesh on his arms and losing his voice by the end of the night with nothing. The house completely burned down and the fire marshal was unable to do anything until morning. By morning, all they could do was shift through the ashes. They were unable to find any traces of the five children, no bones, no bodies, no nothing. It was as if they had completely disappeared. Now, again, earlier we covered an episode, if I'm not mistaken, it's episode 2 or 3 of season 1, and how hot something needs to be in order to burn bone. So it needs to be, here's a reminder for people who did not listen. To burn bone or to burn a body, you have to have constant fire for 1,400 to 1,800 degrees, usually in a very tight area, for 2 to 2.5 hours solid straight. I looked into this and I did a lot of research of this myself. And I mean, technically, it kind of could have happened, but this is a large fire. When people get cremated, it is usually in a small contained area and it's
concentrated.
It's concentrated. So, I mean, it did burn for hours, wood falling on each other in piles. There was a lot of tests that were done and it had been proven that a bunch of fire had burned for about 1,400 degrees, but that was kind of the highest that it got. They estimated that it burned anywhere between 1,000 to 1,200, but a body technically can burn, but it has to burn at that constant temperature for more than 7 hours.
Yeah.
So it has to be constant. So maybe it could have happened, maybe it couldn't, but you also think this is five bodies. Yeah. To say that all five of them burned
without any remains being left over.
And usually they're, even when someone is cremated, usually their teeth are still behind.
Yeah, because they're the hardest to burn.
Exactly. Teeth don't really burn at all. Mm. Like, you have to incinerate them with even higher degree of fire to do that. But nothing was found. When I mean nothing, nothing was found. And it just seemed really, really shady. It was really, really shady. So let's say that the bones did turn to ash. Again, all five of them, it just seemed really impossible. There was too much going on for them to think that this was some normal house fire.
It's inconceivable.
It's inconceivable. I don't think you're using that word right. Anyway, so, I mean, it just seemed really weird and coincidental that the ladder was missing. Both trucks were not working when they were working perfectly earlier. The faulty phone lines, weird phone calls. I mean, it just seemed like, this could not just been some ordinary fire. What could have caused it? So, suspicious? I think not. So, despite the recommendation on the fire marshal, George covered the ashes of his burned family house with his bulldozer. But you want to know how long he waited to do that?
I can't remember. It I know you told me, but
several days.
Yeah.
So usually after a fire happens, and you would think, you know, they shouldn't take that long. It took them several days, if I'm not mistaken, a whole week to finally want to go out there and do an investigation. But this was already, you have a grieving Jenny and a grieving George who have to sit here and stare at their what was once their beautiful house that was helping them raise with their children, and they just couldn't do it. So George covered the ashes of his burned family house with his bulldozer. George and Jenny couldn't stand the sight of their destroyed house and the memories of their children. They had intended to construct a memorial garden in honor of their lost children. The fire marshal wanted to do a full investigation, but because they were shorthanded, they couldn't get it to right away, and George was an impatient man. But oddly enough, the very next day, George had covered the remains of the house with the fire marshal was now ready to do the investigation.
Of course.
Right after they did this, they're like, oh yeah, I guess we'll come up. Oh, you did that? Shit. So without doing so much as walking around the property, he deemed the fire was caused by faulty wiring. But oddly, the next day, George had covered the remains of the house. The fire marshal was now ready to do the investigation without doing so much as walking the property. He didn't dig anything. He just walked the property and was just like, yeah, this was done by faulty wiring. This immediately set off red lights. George had recently had his whole house rewired, and while the house burned, he remembered very well and very clearly that the Christmas lights on the outside of the house remained on while they stood and watched the house burn. If it was an electrical fault, all the power would have been completely off. So the investigation of the house went to trial, and one of the jurors so happened to be the exact same guy who had threatened them earlier that the house was going to burn down. Yeah.
What are the odds of that?
We're going to get into that because there's a little bit more to that story. So the life insurance salesman who had become annoyed and was rejected and threatened that their house would go up in smoke and your children are going to be destroyed was one of the jurors. How that happened, who knows? Like, it was just out of the whole entire town with the thousands of people that live there, this juror specifically is going to be on there. So George was really starting to see everything was really off. This wasn't a simple wiring issue. This was arson. Despite what the jury and court says, he knew in his heart of hearts that there was not an accident. He investigated his phone lines, and the telephone repairman inspector found what he would find would completely shock everyone. So he found that the phone lines had been deliberately cut, which would require someone to climb a 4.3 meter, a little over 14 feet, telephone pole. He would have to reach a further 60 centimeters, which is just shy of 2 feet, to reach the specific wire to cut their phone line. So this wasn't a simple, like, kids playing a prank, jumping up on a phone line that is, like, super low or anything. Like, no, this person had to friggin' climb 14 feet into the air and then dangle somehow, some way, 2 feet just to get to their specific wire.
Yeah, that's
pretty
suspicious.
Yeah, so it was, in other words, someone had to really fucking try to get this done.
Yeah.
With that being said, he inspected his trucks and also noticed that they had been messed with as well. It seemed that some lines were cut deliberately, like it was just a fresh cut. The missing ladder was found thrown down an embankment 20 meters, which is just over 60 feet from their house. So this wasn't like, oh, it fell over and fell into a ditch because the wind blew it. Mind you, there was no wind.
This is more like somebody picked it up and took it over to the ditch.
Right, and they made it purposely like this wasn't, I'm going to pick it up and then I'm just going to take it a couple feet and try and hide it. This was 60 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
So this had to been like, no, I have to move this far enough because if I keep it too close, they'll still find it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they purposely not wanted them to find it. But wait, there's more.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, the family was not going to be quiet. They continued to push for justice. As the case gained media attention, a bus driver on the route that passed the Sauter house told police he had seen a group of people throwing balls of fire at the house. Jenny even remembered the loud thud on the roof, and months later, as the snow melted, 2-year-old Sylvia was playing in the yard when she found a hard green rubber ball. George knew what it was, and he had seen this many times before. It was a pineapple bomb, aka a frag grenade.
That kind of makes you wonder though, like the frag grenade, was it, did it still have the pin in it, or was this something?
It was a dud.
Oh wow. But they didn't hear any explosions, though.
They did. People said that they heard, like, balls of fire. They heard explosions and stuff like that. Like, sounds like that weren't... It was just really weird. Let's just put it that way. They just... The accounts are just really weird. Like they said, the bus driver drove by. They saw balls of fire of the house being thrown at the house. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they only had one grenade and they threw that grenade and it was a dud. So mm-hmm. they just decided to stick with other stuff. We don't know. It's like an open investigation that was never really properly looked into. But they had found this and they actually had pictures of it as well. They took pictures. They sent it to the police and the police were just like, oh, that's interesting. And that's it. Like... That was it. So
yeah, because you always find
flash grenades are in everyone's back pocket nowadays.
Yeah.
Again, everything's really starting to sound fishy. So Jenny would shift through the remains of her life. She had found kitchen appliances that kept their shape, might I add, in the fire. So if kitchen appliances and other stuff that belonged in the kitchen still kept their shape, including like wooden tables and chairs, yet their kids burned in the fire, you would think those would burn first over them. The family had hired their own independent investigator and they had concluded that the temperature had gotten to no more than 200 degrees Fahrenheit, but it had not burned long enough to burn bones. So the hottest it got was 200, but it literally did not stay that more than an hour. 2000. And they concluded that there would at least be bones, if not teeth, of the family. So Jenny had been present during all the experiments and had conducted some on her own, all resulting the same. At least bones or teeth were left, They used pig carcasses mm-hmm. and they had used other things that were close to that of human body to help do these tests. They really, really, really tried. It wasn't just a one-time thing. No, this was multiple times. They had spent a lot of time on this. So this is when the Sauter family was 100% convinced that this was arson, and they knew their five children were still alive as the sightings of their whereabouts had already started coming in left and right. Take a guess, Joe. Even though you probably already remember, if you still remember.
I still remember.
When do you think was the first sighting of the children?
The night of the fire.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the very same night of the fire, the night that the place started burning down, a woman claimed to have witnessed the fire and saw the children in a passing car. Some of them had their heads sticking out the window and they were crying for help. Another witness spotted a man leaving the area with car engine parts. The morning after the fire, they were seen at a rest stop about 60 miles away from the house. A witness remembered serving them breakfast and most of them did not eat. She remembered them going into a car with Florida plates. Another woman working the front desk at the hotel remembers seeing the children come in for the evening a week after the fire. She had seen their pictures in the paper and reported it after seeing it. This was a week after the fire. So she waited only because she didn't realize they were missing until she saw their faces. She mm-hmm. thought it was odd. Like whatever they were doing stood out to her enough to her to remember after a week later. That's what really stood out to her. She told police the children were accompanied by two women and two men, all of Italian. I do not remember the exact date. However, the entire party did register at the hotel and stayed in a large room with several beds. They registered about midnight. I tried to talk to the children in a friendly manner, but the men appeared hostile and refused to allow me to talk to the children. One of the men looked at me in a hostile manner, and he turned around and began talking repeatedly in Italian. Immediately, the whole party stopped talking, and I sensed that I was being frozen out, so I said nothing more. They left early the very next morning. What?
It's just something like that. I would still be like, that's a little sketch, just seeing and hearing something like that. Wouldn't you try to notify somebody? Being like, hey.
I mean, think they're a hotel worker. What kind of shady people come through their hotel like
all the fucking time? I would assume.
Exactly. So if they reported every shady thing that came in,
but she said that that group of people like stood out to her like the most.
Well, yeah, she remembered because she reported it a week later after she saw that the kids were missing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about it, if they arrived after midnight and you have kids with you. The kids are tired. Maybe they've been driving all day. You can think that they're a little grouchy. So maybe, you know, maybe it's just a family that's on a vacation. They were looking for a hotel because they're tired. You know, you have to think of it that way. Like, you have to think of it, okay, I'm in a hotel. You don't know if it's a shitty hotel where they get a bunch of drug dealers or prostitutes or other random shit that come their way. So seeing someone, like, come in late at night because they've been driving all day with children, that's probably what they thought it was. And it wasn't until they saw them a week later in the missing persons on the newspapers, but it was just like, you know, fuck, I just saw those kids. So it's not like they knew at that time before then that this was going on. Remember, this is 60 miles away.
Yeah, I know. I recall that.
Yeah, so the details about the four adults with the children was important detail, as, you know, I mentioned that they were Italian, or at least the person thought they were Italian because they spoke it. The Sauter family lived in Fayetteville, West Virginia. The era was mostly Italian immigrants. George was well-liked, but also many enemies as well. This was all due to, again, his outspoken dislike for Mussolini. His anger was also due to the fact that his eldest son was serving in the American War. His fierce hate for Mussolini was disliked in the immigrant community, and many threats had been made against them. This included the insurance man. Months before the fire, George Jr. and John had spotted a car parked along the school. They had noticed that people inside were spying on the younger children as they left the school and walked along the main highway. So this was still stuff, like, all the stuff is starting to click for them now. And they're like, you know what? This is really starting to make sense and just fishy as fuck. So the family, George Most, was convinced that the children were still alive and that the Italian mafia was responsible for their disappearance, and that the house fire was just a cover up for the kidnapping. For those of you who don't know, the Italian mafia was actually very pro Mussolini. So it was a well-known fact that this was the case. So for a while, they thought it was actually the mafia was mad at George for being so anti-Mussolini. So 2 years after the fire, George and Jenny felt the case was solid and presented what they had to the FBI. In return, they agreed. J. Edgar Hoover offered to help if the local authorities allowed it. What do you think happened?
They denied him, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
Yeah.
As it's just...
Because it was like a jurisdiction type of thing.
Yeah. So the FBI agent J. Edgar Hoover wrote them a letter stating, quote, "Although I would like to be of a service, the matter related appears to be a local character and does not come within the investigation jurisdictions of this bureau," end quote. The Sauter family was thrilled. They were going to get help with the FBI once the local authorities accepted, only they didn't. Fayetteville police and fire department refused to allow the FBI to investigate. This only fueled the fire of a cover-up, and it was time that they set an even larger fire. So hence how I have mentioned earlier, they didn't really get along with the police department and the fire department, and it just seemed really shady that, you know, they didn't want to help something that could possibly, you know, be something more than what they were claiming it to be.
Yeah.
Private investigator C.C. Tinsley was one of who discovered that the insurance salesman had been who had threatened the Sauter family was one of the jurors, and he was one who convinced everyone else that it was a wire fault and not something else.
Convinced as in he paid them?
I don't know. He just knows that it was convinced. Whether he talked him to it, he is an insurance salesman. He has a way with words.
Let me sell you this insurance, and we can say this was was an accident.
Yeah, so he ended up finding out that the jurors were very convinced that this guy was just like, no, it couldn't be anything else. It was a faulty wiring. These people just don't know what they're talking about. He had also discovered even more. A priest had also told Tinsley that the fire chief, F.J. Morrison, had confessed to discovering a human heart in the ashes. He just didn't have the heart to tell the family. Oh my God. Da, 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 da. That was really bad. I'm sorry. He had hid the heart inside a metal box and buried it at a different scene.
Oh, of course, because that's totally normal.
Right, totally. So after much debate and a lot of drinking, Tinsley convinced Morrison to lead him to the area where he supposedly buried the heart, and somehow it was still there. But after properly looking it over, it wasn't a heart. It was a liver. Some say it was a pig's heart, but some even say that it was actually like the heart of a cow or something like that. They couldn't really figure out what it was. They just figured that it was something other than a heart. The organ wasn't even charred, and this suggested that it wasn't even in the fire to begin with. It's like, yes, this is a heart.
No, that's not. How do you... oh my God. I'm still just like, how do you confuse a heart with something else?
I grew up with a family of butchers. My family runs a processing plant, and I've been around organs, animal organs, all of my life. And I can tell you straight up the difference between an animal organ and that of humans. And the fact that they even thought for a second that this could be a human organ, you don't need to come from a family of butchers to know the difference between a human heart and an animal heart. Like, there's just...
But not only that, common sense would also dictate that, hey, this organ doesn't seem like it's charred in any way.
Right? Like, they're like, gee, this looks like it's perfectly harmed. How did an organ survive but not bones? So, extremely pissed off, like most human beings would be, Tinsley questioned Morrison and demanded to know why and where this came from. Morrison confessed that he had set up a hoax in hopes that the Sauter family would discover the heart and would assume that it was one of the kids and finally let the family rest and that they had perished in the fire and stop all investigation.
Somebody seems like they have a guilty conscience.
What the fuck?
Where did you get this? Oh, at the local deli.
I know, right? Like, it just... Why a metal box? Why did he do this? Why did... Like, it just... doesn't make any sense to me. What were they doing? What were they covering up? Again, this just makes me question this 100 times more. In 1949, about 4 years after the fire, the Sauters hired a pathologist from Washington and ordered a more forensic excavation of the fire scene. His finds were shocking, to say the least. They were able to find several small shards of human vertebra. The bones were sent to the Smithsonian Institute for analysis. The vertebra belonged to one person. They belonged to someone between the ages of 17 to 22 years of age. So, quote, on this bias, the bone showed greater skeletal...
maturity.
There you go! They showed greater skeletal maturity than one would expect for a 14-year-old boy. So, the oldest child to be missing was their 14-year-old son. So the report reads that the eldest of the missing Sauter children was 14 years old. The bone also showed no signs of being exposed to fire and being how long the house had burned for. They also stated, quote, one would expect to find a full skeleton of the 5 children rather than only 4 vertebra, end quote. It was concluded the bones were most likely of someone else and was from the soil that George had used to bury and make the memorial garden. But that still makes me question, why is there human vertebra there?
Yeah.
So, for years to come, the Sauter family spent their time chasing leads. The family was plagued with supposed sightings of the children, with George traveling to every lead, and I mean every lead, but there was nothing. A woman in St. Louis claimed that Martha was living in a convent. A Texas bartender overheard 2 people bragging about the fire, stating that they were involved in the kidnapping. George himself saw a photo of a young ballet dancer from New York, and he was convinced this was his daughter, Betty. He drove there, but wasn't allowed to see the girl. He also saw photos of a distant relative of Jenny's own children who bore resemblance to his own. He traveled to Florida demanding proof that they weren't his children. He was truly looking for his children and he would never stop. It took a lot of convincing before his family returned home satisfied. Before he would return home satisfied. A Houston woman wrote to George saying that a man she knew got drunk one night and confessed that he was Louis Sauter. He was 9 at the time of the fire. He claimed he was living there with his brother Maurice. George and his son-in-law Gover Paxton traveled to Houston in the hopes of finding their family, but the woman was nowhere to be seen. They were able to go to the local police offices where they were able to recognize the man in the photo, and they took him to said person. Obviously, the man was surprised. He denied he ever talking to this woman. He denied who he was. He was not Louis Sauter, and he would tell him who his real name was. Paxton and George both left Houston no closer than they were before. Paxton later said that George was never completely convinced by the denial and carried this doubt to his deathbed. In 1952, the family erected a billboard on the side of the freeway with photos of the children and offered of a $1,000 reward for information that would lead to any of them. They wanted their family back, and no matter what it would take, they would do it. The billboard became a local landmark and helped cement the case in the mind of all locals. It stayed up for decades, yet no substantial leads ever came from it. In 1967, Jenny, the mother, who received a letter, it came from Central City, Connecticut. Inside was a photo of a man around the age of 30 who bore the resemblance of their son, Louis. The back of the photo read, Louis Sauter, I love brother Frankie, little boy, A90132. Don't ask me what that means. I have no idea. And apparently their private investigator had no idea either. They had actually had to hire a professional decoder, but instead of helping them, he actually took their money and fled. And they never saw him again. They had tried hiring several other people and several other decoders. No one was able to figure this out. It's still a mystery to this day. And what's also even more of a mystery is they don't have any children named Frankie's. So they're not sure what that means. Again, they're just left completely clueless of what's going on. After a while, they assumed this was just a joke, a cruel prank, and a sick one, really. It wasn't their first time someone had played around with them. Needless to say, they added the photo to the billboard, and they put in a large version of this over their fireplace, believing that was their son. Unfortunately, it would be their final lead, their final and their last lead that they ever received.
Wow.
Yep. So... In 1969, Jode spoke to the Charleston Gazette Mail, admitting, quote, "We can't go any further. Time is running out for us, but we only want to know if they died in the fire. We want to be convinced. Otherwise, we want to know what happened to them," end quote. The following year, George Sauter died. Following the death of George Sauter, Jenny couldn't handle it much. She was filled with so much grief, she dressed the remainder of her life in nothing but black. She spent every day tending to the memorial garden at the site of the fire. She passed away in 1989. The same year, the remaining Sauter children removed the bulletin board from the side of the highway. After 37 years of being a constant present on Route 60, the Sauter children quietly disappeared once again, like their missing siblings. Despite all the hard work and all the proof given to the police, the case was ruled an accident and has remained closed to this day. To this day, though, no one knows truly what happened. Many believe this was a job by the Italian mafia. Why? Because again, the Italian mafia was overwhelmingly pro Mussolini. Unfortunately, there was no real evidence to back up this theory. The surviving children also thought this could have happened, but never followed up on it. Of course, who would? It's the Italian mafia.
Yeah.
So Sylvia Sauter, the only remaining child, doesn't believe her siblings were killed in the fire. Her only memory of the fire was her father's bleeding arms and the screams of her family. 77 years later, there was no answer, and there will probably never be. This case will forever remain a mystery to everyone who knew them. The five Sauter children that were missing at the time were Betty, who was 5, Jenny, 8, Louise, 9, Martha, 12, and Maurice, 14. They would be 82, 85, 86, 89, and 91 if they were alive to this day. And that is the mystery disappearance of the Sauter family.
So there's like two things that I'm really thinking about that's been kind of bugging, not so much bugging me, but I kind of thought of this
that's
time
them,
around.
By the way.
Yeah.
Shoot, what's up?
One of them was the temperature that the bodies burn at. I know that that's what the temperature is for adults, but I wonder if that would vary depending on children, if it would take less time since they're smaller. But that still doesn't explain why nothing was found.
Yeah, absolutely nothing. The fact that they were able to go there and look through the ashes and find remnants of like kitchen appliances, remnants of, I think they said it was a chair and other things, how are these things not caught on fire and are burned to ash? Yeah. When bones and a body take a lot more than they do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that is a valid question, and I don't have an answer for you on that one. Maybe it is less. Maybe if there's someone out there who does cremations for a living, you want to let us know. That would be great. What's your second question?
The second, it's not so much a question, but more like a statement. It's just like, after a certain age, why wouldn't they like step up and say if they were still alive, then why wouldn't they ever like say anything, especially since they were older?
See, a lot of people ask that question. I even ask that question. I'm like, what is holding them back from going and meeting with their family? From what I was able to gather when it comes to that, supposedly they were brainwashed. Kind of think of it as
Stockholm syndrome
kind of thing. Like, they were brainwashed, they were brought into a family, made to believe that this is what it is. Like, I mean
14 years old was the oldest one. I could understand for the younger ones, but for anyone that was like older than 10,
I can actually see it, because Stockholm syndrome happened. And because if you think of the very popular case of the Harris who went and did bank robberies with a bunch of, you know, the Black Panthers and stuff like that, mm-hmm. She was way older than them. She was in her 20s when this happened.
Yeah.
So you can't just say a 14-year-old. It can happen at any age.
I guess, yeah, you do have a point there.
Yeah. So they were thinking that maybe it was Stockholm, or maybe that the fire or something had happened to make them have like amnesia, so they didn't remember. There was a list of things of what could have happened, or maybe they were killed, but they weren't killed on site. They were killed elsewhere. So that's what, there are tons of theories out there.
Why go through the trouble of setting up a house to burn down and getting rid of any means to try to save kids to only kill them in another area?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong person on this.
I know. These are just questions that I'm asking. I'm not necessarily saying I'm looking for those questions. I'm not looking for those answers now. These are just questions that I...
Every question that you've pretty much asked is...
Everybody else
has asked as well, because it is just a mystery on a mystery, topped and covered with mystery goo. Like, it is just... People just don't understand why them specifically.
It's clue glue everywhere.
Yeah, it's clue. If I have a raging clue this way, I'm going to follow your clue.
I almost shot clue glue over Joe.
Yeah. So,
oh God, that's so bad.
It is a mystery to this day. And again, like I said earlier, I still look and follow up just in case if there is, maybe a break of some sort. We are in, 2020 technology wise on this subject. Mm-hmm. It's 2020. I mean, they've been able to catch things that have been cold and cases that have been like shut down for a long while now. You would think that they would be able to find something on this matter, maybe. But again, because it is considered a closed case, the chances of them opening this up is almost, it's not going to happen. So unless somehow the last remaining member, which is the sister, Sylvia, she's still alive to this day. If she can somehow convince someone to reopen it, it's very, very unlikely. So, I mean, this is just going to be one of those great mysteries. One of those people who are going to stay missing. It's not going to, there's not going to be nothing. So with that being said, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Again, I'm going to apologize for it being late. This should have been posted a long while ago. And also
technical difficulties.
Yes. Yes. Technical difficulties. By the time you hear this, it's going to already have passed. But I just want to say happy Father's Day to all those wonderful fathers out there. Happy Father's Day to all the mothers who had to be both mother and father, and happy Father's Day to, fathers that have to be mothers and father at the same time. So just happy Father's Day to everyone. Stay safe out there. Don't forget to wear your mask. Don't forget to, be safe out there.
Social distance yourself.
Social distancing, stay in place. Everyone,
wash your hands for at least 20 seconds.
Right. 6 feet away from people, and just, be strong out there. It's a crazy, crazy world with everything that's happening right now. But, if we stick together, everything will be fine. So hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and stay tuned for our next episode that will be coming out on Friday as well. So you guys are going to get two episodes this week. Thank you again for listening. Be safe out there, guys.
Good night.
Bye.